You're listening to an exclusive Cup of Joe morning show interview here on The Sound of Life.
Matt, and thank you, by the way, for calling, and I hope you're doing okay today. It's a big responsibility when they line up all us Yahoo radio people and say, here, you got to call these guys to talk to them.
So funny. No, you're fine.
Okay. All right. Well, down south, growing up, they used to always ask, how was your mama and them? So I just have to ask about your family, you know, right off the bat, just to make sure they're okay.
They're doing great. I'm out of town right now, so that's always a little bit hairy when you've got three kids under seven.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, because when you have three kids and there's two parents, you have to switch from a man on man to his own defense.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And you're out of town.
Yeah.
She's a swamp.
I'm out of town. So.
Oh, baby. Now, what happens when you get back home? I mean, is it like, okay, now you owe me?
Yeah, pretty much. My wife's like, have fun storming the castle. I'm out of here. No, not that bad. But, we have a nanny who helps. And so that, I think, has kind of helped things a lot. You know, your house gets to a point where it's almost like you're running a weird nonprofit organization. There's like all this, there's so much administration that goes on with having a family, and it's really easy to get caught just in the administration where like you're running your family like a business, and you just forget the whole why you exist, you know, which
right,
is really to
right.
make the love of God visible in the world.
Makes you just want to give up things sometimes. I guess that's what happens. People say, you know, forget it, I'm overwhelmed, which to God, I guess, might be a good thing when you come to that and you just say, I give up, God. As long as you're calling on God,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And I think, you know, and unfortunately, even sometimes people, you know, get hard times happen. And I think for me, the thing is I'm very grateful to God that I've never felt tempted really to give up on my family. Mm. Many times I've thought, oh, man, I could find another job. But, you know, at the same time, it really is what I do is life-giving, and my wife loves what I do. She's so super supportive, and it's interesting though. We're going into this whole new season. She's becoming a kids' book author.
Whoa!
And so, and next year's our 10-year wedding anniversary. So I joked, and I was like, "Is that what this is now? Every 10 years, we're gonna swap." I was like, "So you're gonna go be the breadwinner, and I'm gonna stay home." Which I'm like, I would love that.
Yeah, right. About time.
For about 10 minutes.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
then you'll be like, I'll look at my wife and say, you're a superhero. How did you do this?
Yeah, exactly. You'll be known as her husband now. That'd be a switch, yeah. Huh? Wow.
It would be. It'd be a beautiful one.
Man, oh man. Now, you just got back from Europe, I understand?
I did, yeah. So I was at a few festivals there in the south of England, and then had a couple of different kind of churches and ministries invite me to just do like more of an acoustic kind of night of singing and praying. And it was really, really great. And then we went to Scotland for 5 days, and I brought my family, was able to come with me.
Hey, so, all right.
Yeah. So those are the kind of moments where you really do, you pinch yourself and you're like, I think I'm just I'm very fortunate to be able to do that. And I'm very grateful, you know, don't want to, yeah, I think just want to be grateful for what I have, because what I have is a lot.
Did it change how your music in the future is going to be at all?
Yeah, I'm going to start singing with a Cockney accent.
No, are you going to? Wait a minute. Now, you don't know that I know this, but I know you know Bob Halligan. You've worked with Bob Halligan some, haven't you? With Kaylee Rain?
Yeah.
I was like, we get that going again.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think for me, the thing I love getting to do is just to get out and see what God is doing kind of around the world.
Yeah,
because it's just that, you know, we just tend to think of Christianity or, you know, our faith experience as something as being very personal, or it's something that's small, it's the people that we go to church with every Sunday. But, you know, the reality is the church is a global movement, and there's a lot of stuff happening.
There really, you know, is, yeah. Absolutely. I had a lady yesterday who I'd never met before, and she's, I guess, a worldwide director of prayer for Glow Ministries, and so she organizes people to go all around the world, you know, and pray and stuff, and we were talking about that, about what God is doing with people you know, in ways that, and unfortunately, it doesn't really get out in the news much, but I'm glad I'm here so that I can, you know, a few people, I think I've got 6 or 8 people listening to me in the morning, so, you know, they find out some things going on, but I think that is really good to find that out. It's really cool. Yeah, he's doing it.
And I think that that's how, historically, in some ways, that's how the gospel would have spread. You know, the reality is that people in Rome would have heard these rumors of some guy in Judea with 12 followers, and then they'd hear like these whispers of like, oh, 5,000 people got fed, or blind people can see, or you know what I mean? And you know, and I think the same thing still happens, in the sense that we hear there are these little stories of these little movements of God that we don't fully understand. There's a lot of mystery with it, this side of heaven, and yet I think in some ways they are there to kind of help continue to spark that sense of wonder and that sense of mystery, of, and to keep us connected to a larger worldview, you know?
Mm. Now, Matt, this is probably the worst question anybody's ever asked you, but I just found out your middle name. How do you pronounce that?
Well, so...
You don't?
My first middle name was Guyon.
Oh, Guyon.
Yeah.
Wow. I've never seen that.
Yeah, it's actually a last name. I think it's like a French...
It's got to be cool, like French or something, yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's like the Huguenots.
Oh, okay, and, okay.
Yeah, so my dad's side of the family is all like Scots-Irish.
Oh,
my mom's
okay.
Side of the family is, I think, got French and Dutch, maybe. So, because her father, my mother's maiden name was Bush, but her father's from Utah.
Oh, wow.
His ancestor's original last name was Krautboss, which I'm like, yeah, I could just see the guy at Ellis Island going, what?
Oh, right.
Right. And then my grandmother, my mom's mother, her maiden name was Guyon. So that was her maiden name. So, which I think it was kind of a common thing with kids. You would kind of put the middle name in as a, you know, a continuation somewhere of my grandmother's name.
So. That's what happened to me. Yeah, make fun of, everybody makes fun of, but that's okay. But I always make fun of you because, you know, you were in Newfoundland. I've heard the meteorologists talk about Newfoundland. And then you go to Arizona, of all places. I thought, yeah, I bet you did, didn't you?
That's proof that God has a sense of humor.
Absolutely. Yeah, here we go. I'm on to it now. Amazing. But you mentioned your acoustic thing. Now, that's what you're going to be doing. Now, last year, you were in Voorheesville. I love to say that. Voorheesville. And you get the great privilege of going there. Beautiful town near the capital of New York. Last year, you were at the middle school. Man, what a concert that was. I mean, man, I'll never forget that. Full-blown, you know, Matt Maher at his best. But now you're going to be at St. Matthew's Catholic Church. But I understand it's going to be a little bit, like you said, an acoustic thing.
Yeah, it's just kind of, you know, occasionally when I'm doing these nights, I really feel like it's great to kind of vary things up.
Mm.
And I, you know, I find it accesses kind of a different side of what I do. So I love getting to be, you know, part of whether it's big, you know, kind of worship nights, like times I've been on tour with folks like Chris Tomlin and Toby Mac. But then I also love the idea of just, you know, being in a smaller venue with smaller crowds and being more intimate and getting to kind of share your heart a little bit behind songs and kind of be the loudest sound in the room, be the sound of people singing, you know?
Oh, wow. That's cool. Yeah,
I'm excited.
I like that. I'm glad. It was good that you're excited, and I think that's a good idea. I've seen some groups like Newsboys, you know, when you're down at the meet and greet and stuff, and they do some things just very acoustic. I think that's really pretty cool. You know, most people don't see that side. And so I think it's neat, and I appreciate you doing that. Really do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because you must wonder, I mean, what, 9 albums later and stuff? I mean, you must be thinking, I'm still doing this. And you've got, I mean, you know, you've gotten tons of awards and stuff, and year after year, I'm really amazed. I mean, that's oozing talent. That's a lot of talent that's just, like, coming out, man. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody's different, and I think there's this great quote when Stallone remade the Rocky franchise and did that Rocky Balboa film. I don't know, it's probably 10 years ago now, but
wow.
Or 5 years ago, but he had, you know, in the movie, his wife had passed away from cancer, and he was running a restaurant in Philadelphia, and then he ends up, they put him in a computer simulation against the current heavyweight champion, and he wins, and that sort of spurs on this media interest, and they decide to have this exhibition match. And so he starts training for it, you know, and his brother-in-law, Paulie, is like, why are you doing this, you know? And there's this line, and I really resonate with it. You know, he looks at him, he says, man, there's still stuff in the basement.
Ooh, I love that.
And I got to get it out, you know. And I think that's the thing when you're a creative person, there's this creative fire, and it changes over the years. And you know, I would say mine it's less and less, God willing, less and less ambitious. It's not trying to prove something to the world. It's just there's still stuff that I want to say.
There's rejoicing in heaven when you do that.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, I mean, that's the thing with art. You know, I mean. And I think, too, that the part of the issue is that, you know, music, I mean, look, there's, you know, I always say this, rock and roll is a young man's game. It was a creation of youth culture.
Mm, right.
But art is not a young man's game. Gosh, one of the most celebrated architects in American history is Frank Lloyd Wright. He designed the Guggenheim Museum at the age of 91 years old.
Wow, I didn't know that. I did not know that.
He built Falling Water at 76.
I think about that place all the time. Isn't that amazing? It's iconic. It really is. Oh.
Yeah, it's iconic. But the point is that he did some of his most famed, iconic work later in life. And I think with music, there's just been this thing where stars tend to burn bright and then burn out. You know, and it's true. And I think the thing I just keep asking God is like, God, don't let me burn. I don't need to burn too bright. I just want to burn steady.
I was talking this morning on the air about a preacher in Texas, a woman who's 105. And we're talking about her message, which was right on the money. And I said, and I'm thinking, Matt, you're not even halfway there yet. So, you know, yeah. Go get them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it changes over the years. But it's, you know, I mean, gosh, man, a couple of years ago when I recorded that song, Because He Lives, and you know, there was this one time at the Dove Awards where I kind of sang with Bill Gaither. That man is sharp as a tack. I mean, there is a reason he is a world-renowned singer. And it isn't just because of his faith. It's like he's also put in the work, and he's world-class talent. His ear, his attention to detail, his attention to pitch. You know, he's a professional, and he's like a world-class professional. And that being around that, it really taught me a lot about, you know, it's like saying, you know, Paul says it's Timothy, say not that you are too young. And I feel like now, if Paul was alive, he would probably say to the older church, say not that you are too old.
Right, right. Exactly. I never thought of that, but that's exactly right.
But it changes, you know,
I'm going to have to remember that.
You know, you know, when you get older, at some point, you're not necessarily out on all the front lines all the time. And you're more, you know, you have to be willing to step into that, I don't know, like that elder role in the life of your family and society and like your community. And then also in the church, you know, and I'm looking forward to that. to make that happen.
What now? What's your wife's, she's done a book? And I understand that, right? Children's book? She's done a couple of them?
So this is her first one. So
okay.
My wife, Kristen, an incredible woman, basically probably 3 years ago, started working with a therapist just to kind of process some things that she had gone through in childhood with family, just in her developmental years, you know, going bullying, you know, abuse, just a lot of different stuff. And really in the process, I think realized in some ways there was just like a lot of residual kind of unhealthy shame, toxic shame, you know, and there's that kind of shame basically says, it isn't so much like I made a mistake, it's I am a mistake.
Wow.
And it would floor you the amount of kids now that, you know, they say that more kids, it's more common now for a child to have anxiety or depression than it is a common cold.
Whoa.
Yeah, a lot of it is just the nature, the world in which we live. A lot of it, they're trying to figure out why. And, you know, some of it's probably a combination of media and technology and forcing kids to grow up faster, but they're not maturing faster. So you're just more, as a child, you're more aware of all this stuff, but you don't necessarily developmentally, like your brain chemistry hasn't even caught up yet.
Good point.
And so basically, really, you know, we noticed that our oldest son started exhibiting some of these similar traits of just, he's an oldest child, so he has a big sense of responsibility. He's an incredibly hard worker. He's really gifted, like he's off the chart for reading, but you know, like he's in violin lessons, and if he doesn't get something right the first time, he's like, I'm stupid, terrible, you know. And you know, and it's weird because as a parent, you're like, where is this coming from? Like, we don't say this, and you know, and it's just proof that like we're not perfect. The human condition is very, very real, and so really, I think at first as an attempt to kind of help give him language. She wrote this story about a young boy who gets a visit from the strange, kind of odd-looking creature called the Awfulizer. And basically, he just starts telling him constantly how bad he is. And the more he listens to that voice, the bigger that monster, that creature gets. And it's like he can't even interact with anyone. You know, eventually he ends up talking to his parent. And really, the book is about, it's about helping kids have a strategy for just learning how to talk to their parents about shame. And, you know, in the book, his parents basically open up to him and say, well, yeah, the Awfulizer, he used to bother us when we were kids too. So she wrote this book, and then she ended up interacting with the folks from an organization based in Chattanooga called the National Center for Youth Issues. And they basically work with school guidance counselors. They publish resources for kids in a public school system who end up seeing a counselor, and they're trying to figure out how to find words to articulate what they're going through. And so it's just a sweet little book, man, that packs a really powerful punch. And so it comes out August the 20th, I believe. And I'm so beyond proud of her. You know, I knew my wife was incredibly talented. You know, when I met her, she was doing marketing and sales at an international furniture company. And was incredibly organized, which was a lot of things that attracted me to her because I was none of those. And yeah. I've always just, you know, it's not, I love my wife and I like my wife, but I really admire her. And like, I genuinely look up to her, you know, as you know, the bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh.
That's awesome.
And so I'm really, really excited for her, and I'm excited for kids, you know, and we're really hoping and praying that, you know, God could use it to help children, because it's, yeah, I my goodness, I've made lots of mistakes in life, you know, more than I can even remember. But I was very fortunate to be in an environment with parents who loved me. And so I knew I was loved. I knew I was valued. And I think when those moments of shame came around, it wasn't as difficult. And yet still at the same time, I would say that that's something that I think everybody struggles with, you know, this idea that like we're the sum of every failure, every bad decision we've ever made, every poor choice, you know. And not only that, but even if we've been a victim of abuse or bullying or, you know, just mistreatment, you know, we take that on, and that becomes part of the narrative of our life. I'm excited about trying to be part of ways that help bring light into that and redemption and reconciliation into that and help people move forward.
Matt, what is the name of her book?
It's called The Awfulizer.
Oh, The Awfulizer. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I love that. Now, listen, you don't mind if I interview her, do you?
I would love it.
The Awfulizer. I love that. Now, how would I get in touch with her, though? That's the only thing. I can't call your number.
But publicist can get a hold of her.
Okay. That sounds awesome. Man, that sounds great. Man, that sounds like something I want to do, to talk to her about that book, because that's really cool. There's a lot of things there that we don't even realize that she already knows about.
Oh, man.
You know?
Well, she's not a therapist. She's not, you know, she's just a mom. And I think she's just, which is not, you know, but she's a mom who's coming out of her context and her story. And I think that's the most, like, I think when you're talking about this, the reality is everybody's experienced shame. And so we're all wounded in that way. But what makes redemption so powerful is that God takes our wounds and is able to use them in such a redemptive way to help bring hope and healing to other people. And we don't have to be defined by those things. And so I think I'm really excited. Yeah, I'm really excited for her to get to talk to people. You know, we're still learning, you know, how to talk about it. You know, honestly, someone I think who's been a real source of inspiration for my wife is Brené Brown, who's a researcher, author, who talks a lot about shame and just sort of the effects of it in the world. And, you know, and it is a bit of an epidemic right now, in the sense that so much of our social media has turned into these moments where someone will say something or do something wrong, and we'll all just turn and just throw massive amounts of shame on them.
You're right about that.
And I think there needs to be room for telling the truth. There needs to be the room for accountability and transparency, particularly with leadership of any kind. But I think the hard thing is that if all we do is just throw shame on people, then there's never really any resolution. There's no reconciliation. And I don't know how we do that, you know, and I think that's one of the things that's sort of, as an aside, it's not really about the book. It's just, I think we're living in a day and age right now where it feels like our whole media enterprise has turned into another coliseum, and we're just kind of watching people tear each other apart, and it's entertainment now.
Wow.
And the reality is that Christians were torn apart there.
Right.
And they were martyred there. They were, you know what I mean? And it eventually couldn't sustain itself, you know? And I think that's the ultimate, there's a lot of poignancy, I guess, or irony in the fact that, you know, this too shall pass. You know, our kids will probably at some point, 75 years down the road, you know, my grandkids will be like, "You use the internet unfiltered?"
Yeah, right. I know. You're right.
Like it was a cigarette. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. Yeah, that'll be a big evil thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
You what?
I just think ways that we can bring light into the world and try to bring a spirit of reconciliation without removing someone the opportunity to say what they have to say. I think that's the danger sometimes, you know, is that I think sometimes there's just things that people have to say and they have to get it out. And you have to let people do that, because that's really, that's an important part of any grieving process. That's the important part of any process of healing. And then, you know, and maybe after that, maybe then there's begins to be a space where we can start to move forward and start to say, okay, how do we not let these cycles continue? How do we grow? And so I'm excited for her.
Wow. Yeah, I can tell. Man, taking up a ton of your time there. And I was going to say, probably keep it upbeat. I can see music coming out going, I'm a little concerned. I'm like, oh boy, this is going to be interesting here. But you have a great way with words. You really do. You take subjects like that and you make it something really cool. And anything you got to say in music, man, we will be there for you. Always have been, always will.
Yeah, I'll have a new, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You're going to have a new, what's that? I cut you off. I'm sorry.
I'll have a new project. I should have a new project out this fall. I'm very excited about it.
Wow. Well, okay. I hope you like, you know, people got a deadline, you have to get it done, things like that. I always heard these stories about, you're supposed to get one more song for the album, the project. What are we going to do? You know, and things like that. So I hope that's, you probably got tons of them. You're probably weeding out songs to put in there.
Well, there was a bit of some dry spots, but yeah, the creative juices have started flowing again.
So yeah!
Riding that bandwagon as far and as long as we can.
Well, we're always plugging Matt Maher, whoever, wherever. You know, I said you will regret not inviting him to, if you get the opportunity, to go see him or invite him for your venue, you know, really. It's the way we feel, man.
Well, thank you so much.
Appreciate you very, very much. Yeah, so we'll see you in Voorheesville, man. Thanks,
all
man.
All right, that sounds great.
All right, till next time. Okay, God bless you, man. Take care. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show podcast on the Sound of Life, the Hudson Valley's 100% listener-funded Christian radio station. For more information on upcoming events, contests, to ask for prayer, and to become a member of the Sound of Life family by supporting the station, visit us at soundoflife.org.